Good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:32, July 23rd, 2024. This is an informal hearing. I'm Randy Christman, Chair of the Commission, joined by Commissioner Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchak, as well as Public Utilities Division staff and MDU staff, no one from the public. This case is PU-24-177, and it's a earnings sharing refund plan for when earnings exceed the cap put on in the previous rate case. First of all, I'll say this is an informal hearing, so it involves only undisputed details. If there's anything disputed, we'll have to shut this down and schedule a formal hearing. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchak, did you have any opening comments?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, it's your portfolio. I'll just turn it over to you for comments and then
okay.
Into the hearing.
Well, thank you very much, Randy. This is be an interesting informal. It's a nice situation to have over earnings. And so, like most informals, we'll start with the company. And the only thing I ask is that if you want us to ask questions as you go or at the end, it's up to you on how you want us to ask questions.
Please feel free to ask questions as we go. I would love that.
Okay.
That would be amazing.
Okay. Well, I'll turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you for the invitation today to have this discussion. I'll start with quick introductions of the company representatives. First, I'm Allison Weldon with MDU Resources here representing Montana Dakota today. To my right, you have Travis Jacobson, Director of Regulatory Affairs. And to my left, you have Tara Vesey, Manager of Regulatory Affairs. Also at the table, we have Karina Hendrickson, a Regulatory Analyst with the company. As mentioned earlier, we are here today to discuss Montana Dakota's request for approval of its 2023 earnings sharing refund plan. And this request is filed pursuant to the Commission's order in its previous rate case. Montana Dakota has proposed two refund options for the Commission's consideration, and the company has prepared a presentation to provide more detail as to their request. With that, I will turn it over to Ms. Vesey for presentation.
Thank you. So I kind of have this slide deck, and I'm not sure if Commissioner Fedorchak can see this. Okay. Great. Thank you. So as you can see, just to kind of step back and give a little history that was kind of touched upon, on July 1st, 2023, rates went into effect for the North Dakota Electric case number PU-22-194. And in that order, it was determined that 70% of the earnings in excess of a 10% ROE should be returned or refunded to the ratepayers. And so on May 1st of 2024, Montana Dakota did file an annual report with the commission in which we did report an ROE in excess of 10%. And so we also filed a request for approval of a 2023 earnings sharing refund plan, and that earnings sharing was just shy of $4.9 million. So in that refund plan, we proposed to refund that almost $4.9 million through a reduction of the regulatory asset associated with the Lewis and Clark and Heskett coal units. And those coal units are currently being recovered through the Generation Resource Recovery Rate Rider. And that would also result in a reduction of the return earned by the company. And this would also mean that it would shorten the recovery period of this regulatory asset by about 11 months. So instead of that February of 31 timeframe that we had discussed during that electric case, it would be January of 30. Some benefits to the customer is that there would be a savings of approximately just shy of $36 for that average residential customer using about 800 kilowatt hours a month. which is about $11 more than it would be if there was a customer that was receiving a direct bill credit. And this would reduce Montana Dakota's total recovery of about $7.3 million. And it would also have some administrative efficiency for Montana Dakota to implement and eliminate a need for true-ups and so on.
Kara, can you explain, keep it on that slide, please. Can you explain, or are you going to, where that, why it's more savings for the customer to go with this route than the bill credit?
Right. So if we apply the earnings sharing right now to that regulatory asset, that sort of that time power of money over those 11 months, over the long term, is essentially the value of not having that charge from January or February of 30 through February of 31. So it's eliminating of that portion of the generation resource recovery rate on the customer's bill for that those 11 months.
And then just to expand, Commissioner Fedorchuk, we earn a return on the regulatory asset. So the reduction is really a lower return over the remaining life of that asset.
Sure. Does it benefit existing customers or just the future ones? I'm still trying to get my brain around that.
So it's going to benefit the customers that are in effect as of January 2030.
Okay. Only those. All right. Does it benefit the current customers at all?
I mean, right now that rate is going to essentially stay the same throughout the next, the next few years throughout, from now till January of 2030. When it expires, that amortization time period expires.
So it really doesn't.
That would
benefit the current customer.
There would really, it's just the big benefit is shortening that time period.
Got it.
So I have a question to Commissioner Fedorchuk's first question on that, the difference between the 7.3 million and the 4.9 million, how you accumulate that on your application. Is this does not go through it at all?
No.
Can you submit something that shows for me how you arrive at that 7.3 so I get more of a visual to understand the difference between the 4.9 and how you get to 7.3? Okay. Yep.
If you look at the beneficiaries as being of the proposal that you've given us as being the 2030 customers, is it also fair though to say that if it wasn't for this, they would be paying for something that never benefited them either, because
that would
even
be true.
Even current customers who weren't customers a few years ago never benefited from these regulatory assets, yet they're going to be paying for them. So this actually gets it closer, I'm thinking, to the benefit to assigning these costs to the ones who benefited from these assets.
That would be true, yes.
Talk to me about that, Randy. Like how, if the only people benefiting from this would be the ones in 2030, how does that get it closer to the ones?
Well, I mean, conceivably, if you're like me and assume that I last till 2030, I will have benefited from Heskett and I will pay costs into here. So I think the distinction has to be like new customers who weren't in a particular era. And so,
got it.
Yes, this move would benefit the 2030 customers. However, some of those 2030 customers never got anything out of these plants because they maybe didn't even live in North Dakota then. So
the further out you get from this, the more likely it is that none of them or fewer of them benefited from the two plants that are right. being
and so,
recovered.
You know, without doing rate shock, it seems to me we should try and get these assets off the books as quickly as possible. And to me, that this moves the ball that direction. So I hope I haven't given away which way I'm leaning on this.
It seems like you have.
Go ahead.
Any other?
Just a quick accounting question. So would you for the amount of this is Chris Hansen talking, for the amount of the refund, would you reduce the rate base currently by that? So in essence, there is a current period. I would have expected there would be a current period benefit from this as well, but it's not really broken out. So it's not all at the end, is it?
So it would be. We wouldn't change the amortization.
Oh, okay.
We would change the rate base. So, you know, I guess.
Got what you're saying.
You know, to Commissioner Fedorchak, there isn't an immediate benefit to customers today, but there's a long-term and a greater benefit to customers over time because exactly what you said, the rate base ends up being lower.
Mm-hmm.
We're keeping the amortization the same.
Gotcha.
You know, and that mm-hmm. was consistent with the order that we have.
Yep.
So, yep.
No, that makes sense.
Okay.
So alternatively, we did offer a direct refund plan in which we could issue a refund directly over a period of 2 months to the customer, and we could just provide this refund directly onto the customer's bill. We did, within the filing, propose a August and September refund time frame if this would be the commission's preference. We would offer that if this was the preference, we would prefer it would be more of a September-October time frame at this point.
Why is that?
Just because of the close proximity of the August time frame, it would be a lot of testing and work to get done
sure.
to make sure that we could provide an accurate refund by August. Mm-hmm. And that approximate refund would be about just shy of $25 again for that average residential customer. And we would just do that right to the customer's account.
Split, so they'd get 12 and a half each month.
Yeah, I mean, about that. And just
so
to
looking at the two options, how would you explain it to your customers? How do you explain it? I mean, if we went option one, how do you explain it to your MDU customers, or option two? And which one do you think your customers would prefer?
So the immediate benefit, and you know, I mentioned that earlier, there mm-hmm. there isn't one if we go with our option one, our preferred alternative. Over time, customers are going to benefit more using the option that we laid out. So the other part of it is it a meaningful benefit at $12 off of your bill for over 2 months? There's an argument, I think, on both sides, whether that's, you know, customers would notice that. It would be a separate line on their bill. So, yeah, it kind of comes down, you know, Commissioner Christman said, well, if I'm a customer today and I don't plan to be here later, I think there's an argument you can say, well, I would want my money now.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side is if I think at the time that does go off in 2030, it would be more meaningful for the eternity than that whole charge comes off my bill that went from whatever it happened to be, $3, $4, $5 to zero for the remainder of that time frame. So
I understand the pros and cons for both.
Yep.
I'm asking you from a perspective, from a customer standpoint, what do you think that they would want? the here and now.
Yeah, I think every customer is going to be different. I think a lot of customers would say, you know, I'll take everything I can today, if I were being honest.
Please do so.
And if you were to ask me, I'd say what's the best in the long term. That would be my preference.
We've debated this kind of internally a lot, and, you know, we've both said, hey, like for me, you asked me, I'd say, if you could tell me, give me $25 today or $36 tomorrow, I'd say give me $36 tomorrow. But I think some people would, depending upon your situation, you might say, give me $25 today too, and I could understand either perspective depending upon your situation. So it's really a hard, I can see where it's a hard scenario or a hard decision. A hard decision to make. Because no matter, you know, where you're at, I'm sure you have people on both sides of the coin coming to you.
Especially during these times.
For sure.
Right now.
Yeah.
So do you communicate either way? What's your plan on communicating to your customers on this refund? How do you communicate to them this earnings, and based on the commission's decision, what do you tell your customers?
I don't believe, so if option number one, I do not believe there would be any communications with customers. In other words, I don't think we'd do a bill insert. If it was option number two, I'd have to ask Steph. I would expect we would probably put a bill insert. We generally do with refund, but this is, I would say, a one-off refund that I'm not sure. It's been quite a long time since we've had one of these, but I'm not sure I have the answer for that.
Good. Something to think about.
Yeah. Sherry, what were you thinking of in terms of communicating to the customer?
Well, I think we're just in a time, it's not business as usual. People are more involved, or it's an opportunity to inform. And just looking at, do you have an opportunity to inform that we have these earnings here, and this is the benefit to you as our MDU customers, you know, based on that and saying, yeah, we have these earnings, it's coming back to you, and this is the way it's coming back to you. That's a positive. And even if it's something on your website or something, it's just information that you can share, good news. So,
I mean, I will say there is a downside to over-earning, and that it suggests that the rates are too high. So I think that that's, you know, there's a balance in that message that is a fair question for the customers as well.
Which I think is a good segue to my question, which will be after the next slide.
Would you like me to go to the next slide? So the
unless one, you had more that you wanted to tell us on that.
No, side, certainly. I'm ready. I'm ready if you all are. So, you know, one thing we wanted to talk about here was really what the drivers were for the return on equity above 10%. And, you know, really three things that we're talking about here today. One thing was higher volumes really are driven by weather. Weather was 4% colder in 2023 than normal. And, you know, the 4% colder in 2023 was really, well, I'm kind of a data person. Really, that first half was a lot colder. It got warmer towards the end. So the first half was really cold, if you all remember. So those volumes were really a lot higher in the early part of 23. And then Heskett 4 was delayed further than we thought. It was commercially operational as of July 8th So it is online now, but it was delayed beyond what we thought it was going to be. And then also we did have a Rate 45 customer that went online in March of 23. So those three things were, you know, three key factors that really drove that ROE above that 10% in 23.
And so I'm not seeking precision here, but of these three, like, is one of them 80% of the excess earnings and the other two are 10 each, or are they about equal thirds, or what's accounting for this?
I would suggest that Heskett 4 is probably about half of it.
Okay.
And just clarification, too, we didn't know, but this, since the rate case went into effect 1st of July, I think, this is for half a year, and could you speak to that really quickly, you know, about how you calculated the earnings for half the year? Because I think it goes to your point about the cold weather and stuff versus, you know, you're talking first and second half of the year, because this is really only for the second half of the year when the new rates went into place and we put the earnings cap in. So if you could speak to that.
Sure. So the order indicated that we would provide a sharing based on earnings reported in our annual report. And so what we did is we took the earnings and then calculated a return on that and then compared that to what it would have been if it were capped at 10% and then calculated the savings on that based on 50% of the year. In other words, rates went in July 1. That was the time period covered by the order that had the sharing. Prior to that, there was no sharing mechanism. And so that's what we calculated it on. That's how we calculated that.
So does that kind of go against a little bit of the first one about the weather being colder at the beginning of the year? Because this was for the second half of the year.
Right. And so the reason we did a 50-50 is in large part throughout the year, there's accounting estimates that are made. A big one is income taxes. You know, the income tax, you don't get a bill for the first half and the second half. You make estimates throughout the year. Certain benefits, medical, for instance, if the run rate is higher, you have true-ups at the end of the year. If it's lower, you have true-ups the other way. And just other types of accruals that happen throughout the year. The other half of that is rate base. In our annual report, we typically report rate base as a beginning of the year, end of the year average. And so we stayed with that same methodology. And, you know, certainly the data, we do a monthly booking of entries. We have a monthly income. However, it seemed the most appropriate to use a one half of a year in determining that percent of a refund.
Mm-hmm. So to your point, even though it was for the second half of the year, the cold weather at the beginning of the year actually did impact your calculation.
That's right.
Okay. Yep. And explain what a Rate 45 customer is.
So that is our Applied Digital customer that came online in March of 2023, and they have the data center down in Ellendale.
And that was a substantial impact upon the total here as well.
It certainly impacted it, yes.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay.
I have to say, I thought you would have said the Rate 45 customer had the biggest impact.
So
I was surprised that Heskett was about half.
Maybe what we could do is go to the next page and Tara can go through that, and then I can provide context to that question, if that would work.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, so when we talk about the Rate 45 customer, you know, one of the certainly that customer does provide benefit and did assist with our earnings in 2023, but there's a decent portion of the revenue associated with that customer that goes back to the rate payers for and so we did want to touch base and talk about how this particular data center customer. It does reduce the customer's bills in three areas. And so just a reminder that this customer is touching the transmission rider, it's touching the fuel and purchase power adjustment, and now touching the earnings sharing. So the average customer, again, is seeing about $75 of credits a year due to this data center. And so pretty significant effect on the average customer's bill.
This $75 you've annualized, even though it was only for 9 months of last year, right?
That is correct, yep.
And that's just unit one, because unit two hasn't started yet.
Yes.
And so to expand on that just a little bit, so when you look at rate 45 in mm-hmm. total, I agree, it's a much larger impact. But when we talk about just its contribution to earnings, if you remember in the settlement of the electric service area agreement, our electric service agreement for data center one, 70% of the margin was directly credited to our fuel and purchase power adjustment, which is the second bullet on Tara's mm-hmm. slide there. So there's actually the earnings, if you will, the margin is actually getting moved off prior to getting to what Montana Dakota reports as earnings. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that's why it's a little bit smaller than I think you probably would have anticipated, yeah.
Okay.
So in essence, it's reducing that rider cost.
It is, right. Yep. And just our last rider, which we filed on the 17th of this month, that credit to North Dakota customers over a four-month period was $1.4
million.
$1.4 million as it runs through our fuel and purchase power adjustment.
So I had a question, just an observation, I think. So we were looking at the rate base, the average. So the 746, 496 rate base, is that an average for the year or average for the 6 months?
Year.
Okay. And then you had earnings of 61.7 million on that, which included an accrual of $4.5 million, so you really earn 65.1 without the accrual for the earnings sharing, which comes out to be the 8.719 rate of return overall. But because part of that rate of return includes debt, your return on equity was the 12.797, and then so since that was over the 10%, then you're sharing basically 70% of the 2.797%. It's kind of how you come to your numbers.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Commissioner Fedorchak, did you have any other questions?
You guys are asking some good ones. Thank you.
You?
No. No. Julie Victor's coming to the table.
He said he's got a bunch.
Okay. So I didn't catch that in the applications that you and Chris were talking about as far as you excluded what exactly from the earnings from 2023?
So during 2023, we did an accrual for earnings sharing. So on a GAAP basis, you know, we had to do that. So I don't know if we want to say we excluded or we included it. Refund calculation is absent the accrual, if you will. So we had to take what we earned or what we reported in our annual report and then add back $4.5 million because we reserve that in advance, and then figure out what the earnings are, and then calculate your earnings from
there. Okay, I see what you're saying. Sorry, I misunderstood that conversation. As
yeah,
maybe you're saying like, oh, no, any earnings from before July 1,
yeah.
Just hang on to that.
No, no, okay. I was like, maybe if I showed you, I'm like, I think you're going to like what you see if I show you.
Okay.
Like, no. Here's so this is what we had on the annual report. Because in the annual report, we, of course, had this accrual, right? But then for this filing, we backed up to before the accrual because that would only be right. So to Chris's point, it was the 12, it was the 2797 that we started with and kind of backed up to here and then said, okay, here's, you know, here's the 4.5. And then we went from there to go get to
okay, and just so I understand, this reserve, this is the margin that is the, and I forget the percentage now, but like 25-30%? No.
No. So our refund plan is to get back $4.8 million.
Okay. So this was just an approximation.
It was an estimate.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding that right. Okay.
Yep.
So that's good. Now, so that answers that question. I feel much better about that one.
Okay.
I still got more, though. So.
Okay. Bottom buck.
Next up. So the margin for the rate 45 customer. I know there's a lot of a trade secret, and we don't need to talk about the trade secret portion of it. But the margin itself, was that included in your earnings in what was reported?
Yes.
Okay.
So the portion that we keep is included in earnings.
Okay.
The portion that is reserved, obviously that's a match. There is a revenue and expense. They just go in and credit the rider.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. That's good. Okay. Those are the ones I think were going to be harder for you. But I just wanted to differentiate for the commission a little bit more. So when you talk about the benefit of using the $4.9-ish million to reduce the size of that regulatory asset rather than refunding immediately to customers. So I recognize there's that whole struggle. You know, Julie has a fair point that you know, you're taking this benefit from current customers and giving it to theoretically customers in the future. But Brandy's point is also valid that, you know, this regulatory asset has been out there for now, what, 7-ish years or so? I think since 2016?
No. We didn't even retire them until 2019.
Okay.
So we started.
Five years.
Yep.
So already we have, you know, generational inequity. Customers. So it's kind of adding another wrong to make a right in some ways, but in other ways, it's kind of reducing the wrong as well. I think there's two ways you can look at it. Neither one is wrong, I guess was my point in that. But there's one other benefit that I didn't see on the list that I thought was noteworthy, and I think MDU was trying to quantify that a little bit, and that is, to me, it makes me smile when MDU gets less of a return, and that's part of what this would do by...
Huh. I've turned off my microphone for the laughing part of my
So by taking that $4.9 million and applying it to that regulatory asset, you are reducing the rate base and thereby reducing the number that the return is calculated off of for all of those future years from now until 2030. So and that total is roughly what, $2.4 million, I think, over the so from now until 2030, MDU gets about $2.4 million less in a return, which is, like I said, makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
In essence, you take the refund today and you put it in the bank and you earn interest at the rate of return that MDU earns. So whatever that you know, it's 10% equity, somewhat less, like 7.3% or something like that. So it's almost like putting it in the bank for 7.3% and getting it in 7 years. So that's why the number's bigger. So if you're thinking of it from an earning standpoint for an individual, so.
Yep.
But
yeah, I just wanted to point out those couple of things. I don't think either option is wrong. I just kind of wanted to point out there's generational inequities in either scenario, in my opinion. But so
That's it?
You said
that's
a bunch.
Not a whole one.
Well, I think there was going to be more if what I was originally understanding that calculation to be, that would have taken us way down a rabbit hole that may or may not have made sense to anybody.
I felt but, Victor getting just riled up there for a second.
This isn't directly related to this, but if we're halfway through 2024, and obviously we had a really warm winter, so that's going to negatively impact your gas earnings. But what are you looking at for the current year, since we'll have a full year under this plan? Any sense of what forecasts are telling you for 2024?
So just to clarify one thing, you mentioned gas. This is only on our electric utility.
Okay. Right, sorry. I keep thinking you as being combined, but correct.
Yeah, yeah. Correct, yeah. So I guess at this point, I would expect that there may not be any sharing. Heskett did come online. Mm-hmm. With that, it increases rate base, it increases depreciation and other expenses.
Okay.
If you go back to last year, the earnings were 23, which matched our rate case. We're now 1 year into any labor changes, inflationary adjustments, et cetera. And then we've also had additional closes to plant, so which causes rate base to go up.
Sure.
I don't have a number.
Okay.
That I can really stand by, but
so it might be a one-off, potentially.
Potentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ryan, do you have anything?
So got a feeling I'm going to be really embarrassed when you answer this, but the main question that I had from the very beginning that I'm just not seeing the answer to in the application in the third paragraph. So go down there toward the end of the second line in the third paragraph. So you have realized earnings of $62 million. On a rate base of $746 million. That seems like a little over 8%, not over 10%. Like, where's the math on that you're well over 10% ROE?
So, and Chris touched on this a little bit. Chris touched on it a little bit. So you're exactly right. That would produce an 8.3% overall return, which is your overall return including equity and debt.
Okay.
So the normal expectation for utility rate making, we have the return on equity that the company has or company stockholders have, and then there's a certain portion that is debt, like okay. Long and short-term bank debt, essentially. And those have different interest rates. And when weighted average of those two together to come up with the actual percentage that's charged against rate base.
So the simple math, and I'm not saying this is exactly in this case, but let's say the debt's at 5%. So debt and equity are roughly 50-50 generally. And if the equity is at 10 and the debt's at 5, then your average cost of capital overall is about 7.5%. So then they basically would pay a refund on anything over a return on total capital of like 7.5%, which is, so it's just a weighted average of the two. So this is for the portion that's over the 7.5 roughly percent. So,
okay. Just when I thought we had no more questions, Victor popped up. So I'll turn over to Clayton. Did you have any questions for us? Okay. And one more time around, Julie, anything more?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
And Sherry?
Nope.
Okay, well, I think we're about concluded. Allison, are there any objections to the evidence presented today, which would be both the slides as well as the recording becoming part of the record upon which a decision will be made?
No objection.
Okay, so the evidence presented today will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other? Oh, Brian, did you have any objections?
No objections.
Okay, so it will become part of the record. Are there any other matters for the record? Okay, if not, we are closed. Thank you, everyone.